Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Ask any CEO how important customer service is to their company's success, and you're sure to get some variations on our customers are our highest priority. It's no secret, service is the golden key, but saying it and doing it right are two different things entirely. Why? Because most executives still view customer service as a cost center, a necessary nuisance that drains funds from other more strategic investments. But for companies with a strategic approach to the customer service function itself, it's an unbeatable marketing machine, a word-of-mouth monster that directly drives sales, repeats business referrals, and increases the bottom line. Our guest today is author John Goodman, whose new book is entitled Strategic Customer Service. John is one of the originators of the customer experience industry. John is the founder and vice chairman of Arlington, Virginia-based TARP Worldwide Incorporated, the organization Tom Peters called perhaps America's premier customer service research firm. John, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much for having me.
John, companies today are refocusing on their core customers. What role does customer service play in successfully retaining those customers?
A key thing is that the customer service department is no longer just the complaint department, but really does perform a strategic role, making sure that every customer experience from when the customer first thinks about buying the product all the way through billing and use is a positive experience that produces positive word of mouth and an intention to buy additional products. Also, customer service through this better experience can actually allow the organization to justify higher margins. When people don't have problems, all of a sudden they're then much more willing to pay more for the product. Conversely, if they run into a problem, it's, gee, given what I'm paying, I shouldn't be having these problems, and all of a sudden sensitivity to price doubles or quadruples.
All right. Why do you suppose so many companies still struggle with and don't understand that your customer service department is really the voice and face of your company?
I think they really haven't done the math, and in very few organizations has the chief financial officer really understood the linkage between the customer experience and the revenue. The reason is they can immediately see that if costs are going up due to service, that immediately appears on the bottom line. If a customer has a good experience and decides to come back and buy or to spread positive word of mouth, those two sources of revenue are actually sometime in the future. It may not be that far in the future, but because it's in the future, the finance guy can't immediately put that on the bottom line. So you have the short-term cost implication versus the longer-term investment, and in this environment, the short-term cost has the greater impact.
Do you find that the burden to communicate that logic and that reasoning to the financial decision makers falls upon, for instance, the director of customer service in a company?
Ironically, you're exactly correct. It really falls to the customer service executive to explain it not just to the finance people, but also to the marketing people. Even the marketing guys in most organizations haven't really thought through this linkage of customer experience to incremental revenue and word of mouth. This becomes really important because whenever I've asked a chief marketing officer, how important is word of mouth to your organization, everyone invariably says, oh, it's really important. And in fact, the minimum percentage of new customers that are obtained through word of mouth is about 20 to 30%. But for a lot of organizations, such as Chick-fil-A, USAA, Harley-Davidson, you'll find it's as high as 70%. So the customer experience leading to positive word of mouth will make the marketing guy's job much, much easier, but they seldom really understand that. And if the question is asked, how important is word of mouth? The answer will come back, very important. Then you say, okay, have we measured it? Have we managed it? Well, we haven't really measured it. My service operation is the place where we can manage it. So all of a sudden, you can then build a compelling logic to get both finance and marketing to really start thinking about making the appropriate investments in customer service.
What are some of the most common causes of customer problems?
This is an area where our book challenges conventional wisdom, because in almost every organization, the assumption is if you have a dissatisfied customer, it's because Mary Lou, that frontline rep, must have done something wrong, and if we can identify who she is and have a public hanging, life will then be beautiful. We disagree with that completely. We think that 98% of employees come to work desperately wanting to do a good job. And in most cases, when you have a dissatisfied customer, it is because Mary Lou has told the customer exactly what management told her to tell him, but that just doesn't make the customer happy. That's not her fault. That's management's fault. The primary causes of customer dissatisfaction are either products that have unpleasant surprises built in, processes that on their face alienate the customer, or marketing setting incorrect expectations that then aren't going to be fulfilled by the product and the process. Those three areas contribute to probably 60% of dissatisfaction. Another 20 or 30% of dissatisfaction is caused by customers doing strange things or having wildly incorrect expectations. One of my favorite is we were working with a well-known liquid bleach company. They would not get a complaint, but a helpful suggestion once a month from customers saying, "Why don't you make your bleach taste better?" The specific suggestion was cherry flavored. Now, people brush their teeth with this liquid bleach, and it does whiten your teeth. It also whitens your esophagus, and I don't know what it does for your breath. The basic point is customers do dumb things with products, and it's to the point where Sharp Electronics now says when all else fails, try reading the directions.
Okay.
Most companies still say, well, look, if the customer's an idiot or did something stupid, it's not my problem. It is their problem because they get blamed for it, plus they have to clean up the mess. The bottom line is, yes, on occasion, employees with a bad attitude will cause a problem, but that's probably no more than 10 to 20% of the causes of dissatisfaction. Most of it is broken processes, incorrectly designed products, marketing misleads, and then customers that do really strange things and fail to read the directions.
Of course.
When I give speeches, I ask the audience, how many of you have read your automobile owner's manual cover to cover? Invariably, one hand goes up. No one reads the directions. And there is an assumption that no one reads the directions, but you over-design the products to where the complexity requires all kinds of additional customer support. And in fact, at one of the well-known high-end automobile companies, their head of customer experience had to set up a separate call center for GPS and another separate call center to support Bluetooth. She then went back and told the engineers, no more technology until it's intuitive, because we're having to provide all this incremental support.
Interesting. I'm just flashing on when the family got a Dell computer some time ago. The first thing you saw when you opened your box was this big poster-sized, very graphical instruction thing about how to connect the pieces.
That's actually a very good segue into how one can prevent customer problems. The quick start chart that says, we know you're not going to read the manual, so here's the three things you need to do to get started. What we call the preemptive educational strike works extremely well. You can save the customer from getting into trouble that way. And one of my favorite examples is Armstrong Industries, who won the Baldrige Award a while back, and they manufacture Solarian, the no-wax floor. What we found was, no one ever read the care directions. So you'd get your new kitchen floor installed, and the first thing you would do would be to take Ajax and abrasive powder and clean the floor. You would then ruin the surface, abrogate the warranty. You go away angry, and Armstrong loses the $12,000 that the average American spends on floor coverings because you'll never buy Armstrong again.
Right.
So what they did was print an 800 number on the top side of the floor in black every 3 feet, and they would get the logical phone call 100,000 times a year. I love my new floor, but the 800 number doesn't go with the wallpaper. How do I get it off? And the answer was warm soap and water, but now that I have you, here are the three things you need to know about maintaining your floor.
Right.
They viewed the $5 phone call as an insurance policy on the $12,000 cash flow.
Right. Kind of put a soft roadblock in the way.
Exactly. Now, the other approach is what we call psychic pizza, which is the guy rings your doorbell and says, here is the pizza you are about to order. One of the best examples of the psychic pizza approach is practiced by Amazon, because a standard question every customer has is, okay, I've done this order. Has my product been shipped? What Amazon does is send you a communication saying, your book has been shipped. your book should be delivered on this date. So they preempt your question by providing you with the information in advance. So the psychic pizza approach of answering the question before it comes up is another way of preventing problems and unnecessary service expense.
Right.
And then the third area where one can innovatively handle problems is once a problem has occurred, a lot of organizations will say, okay, we'll give you a refund, we'll throw money at the issue, and we may apologize.
Right.
Yes, the apology is important because I want you to empathize with the fact that I've had this problem, but in many cases, what I really want is a clear, believable explanation as to why this happened and what you're going to do to prevent it in the future. In many cases, the frontline employee knows what the policy is or knows sort of what the process is, but if asked to justify the rationale behind it, in most cases doesn't know the rationale. This is just our policy. When an employee can't defend why a company is doing what it's doing, they give one of two answers. It's either, look, Mac, that's our policy, which comes across as rudeness except in New York, or the other answer is, yeah, that is a stupid policy. I don't know why we do it that way. I work for a stupid company, which also doesn't do much for corporate image. And so if the employee can be armed with the clear, believable explanation as to why we do what we do, all of a sudden they can satisfy the customer, or at least mollify the customer, without throwing a lot of money at it. And my favorite example of that is if the airline pilot gets on and says we have a one-hour delay due to a mechanical, there are a bunch of follow-ups. On the other hand, if he gets on and says we have a leak in the hydraulic system, almost everyone says, I want a good hydraulic system, take an extra 30 minutes if necessary. We joke at Lexus that when you're saying no to the customer or giving him bad news, the object of the game is to tell the customer to go to hell in such a way that he looks forward to the trip.
Well, you've given us some examples of dealing with some of these things. Is it more expensive to give great customer service than good service?
It turns out in most cases to be cheaper to give great customer service. And I would use Amazon as an example. Amazon, through their psychic pizza and proactive education, preempts a whole bunch of service transactions. So the customer is getting what he wants and is getting all the information he needs. It's actually at lower cost than if he had to call and ask for it. It's dramatically cheaper to give really good service because in many cases you don't have to give any labor-intensive service at all. You're eliminating all the unpleasant surprises or things that would cause questions. The perfect example of this in Amazon was they achieved new record levels of customer satisfaction the same quarter they took $30 million out of their service budget by moving to this preemptive education and psychic pizza approach.
John, a lot of people seem to feel that this type of strategic customer service orientation really doesn't apply to the nonprofit sector, and especially these days to government. What are your thoughts on that?
The same processes really do apply in both not-for-profit and governmental organizations. Mm-hmm. We've worked with a big New York museum recently, and a number of the very standard problems and complaints that their frontline staff had to deal with on an ongoing basis could be dealt with through this preemptive education and psychic pizza approach, where you explained why you were doing things, or you would provide an alternative approach to doing something that was not onerous to the customer. So it tends to be cheaper to give really great service than to just give good service in a nonprofit environment.
Right.
Another challenge that both government and nonprofits face is customer expectations in those sectors are dramatically lower, where people don't expect very good service. So if they get bad service, they tend not to complain about it and often will just stop using the service. For governmental environments, that's really bad because the customer is then not making use of the benefits and services that the government is trying to provide. The basic reason people don't complain is what we call trained hopelessness. They have complained in a governmental or nonprofit environment in the past, maybe in a completely different agency or organization, but if they got unresponsive service there, the assumption is this same level of poor service will exist here, so why bother complaining? in general, only about 15 to 20% of people who have a serious problem with a nonprofit or governmental organization ever even complain to anyone about it. And in many cases, the employee who hears the complaint doesn't even recognize it as a complaint. It's what we call a grumble or gripe.
Okay.
I was in one organization not too long ago where I was listening to a phone call. Someone called up to do a routine transaction. You could hear the keystrokes as the transaction was being done. And then the customer said, you know, whenever I call you guys, no one ever returns my phone call. And you continued to hear keystrokes, and then a very detached, oh yeah, we hear that a lot.
Yeah.
Then the person went on to complete the transaction. Now, had you gone to the service person, they would have said, oh, he wasn't complaining, he was just making conversation. But what the customer heard was, we know it's a problem and we don't care.
Exactly.
So in many cases, the frontline employees have not been sensitized to even listen to what's taking place. They're so focused on their transaction.
John, talk about the value of strategic customer service during recessionary times.
The real value of strategic customer service is it allows you to go back to your core competencies and just make sure you're doing those really well in a way that will retain the customer but also foster positive word of mouth, so you don't have to spend as much on marketing and cost cutting and promotions and couponing to get customers to come in. Even in very tough times, while customers are more price sensitive, customers will pay more if they know they're going to get good service. This is why companies like American Express can charge several hundred dollars for a platinum card while their competitors have to give them away. The strategic approach to customer service allows you to reduce expenses, make your employees happier because they're more efficacious, they aren't handling complaints about dumb policies that never should have been established to begin with. At the same time, you're going to generate more revenue and positive word of mouth, so your marketing expenses are also lower. The last benefit is when you look at the expense companies face due to regulatory issues and lawsuits and insurance claims, most of those regulatory and risk expenses started out as a bad service experience. And to the degree that you can give better service and be responsive to customers, your regulatory, legal, and risk expenses go down 20 or 30% at least.
We've been speaking to author John Goodman. His book is entitled Strategic Customer Service. John, thanks for being on Edgewise today.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciated the time.
It would be great to hear your feedback on this program, so please drop us an email note at podcast@amanet.org or call us at 800-697-3406. That's 800-697-3406. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.